Welcome to the Serious TV Drama Podcast with Scott and Dan. I'm Scott, and with me as always, the Megilla to my gorilla and the donkey to my Kong, it's Dan.
Good evening, Scott.
Do you realize that we have now covered good morning, good afternoon, and good evening in one day of podcasting? We're like the Truman Show here, or something. In case that makes no sense to anyone who's listening to this podcast, Dan and I did convene this morning in daylight morning hours to do our Legion podcast. So for fans of that show, please look up that podcast. It's really worth a listen. It's nice and brisk and fun and informative. But we are here to talk about the usual CW superhero shows, which means before we go any further, we should bring in the gang, our little STVD All-Star Squad. So, coming to us from Illinois, but not actually Chicago, it's Vicky.
Hey there.
Cool.
It's still Chicago.
Well, don't ruin the intro, man. But checking in from Louisiana, but not really New Orleans, it's Cade.
Hello, Seattle. I'm listening.
You gotta keep that going. Awesome. And finally, chiming in from Kentucky, but... ah, fuck. He is from Louisville. Dude ruins it before he even says anything. It's Jason.
Excuse me, it's pronounced Louisville.
Ugh. Not for people who actually understand
like King, English. Like King Lua. Yeah,
King Lua of France.
Welcome. That's how they say it here.
Oh, whiskey. Anyway.
We know who's from out of town.
Mm-hmm. So, as I said, we are here for another full slate of the CWDC superhero shows, so pretty much going to skip any ramblings about news or any other geeky-related matters, other than to reiterate to people out there, the people who are fans of the DC animated series that have been done over the last 25 years, I'm telling you, you must make a point to watch this show on Cartoon Network, Justice League Action. The last episode was a total homage and goof on the Batman animated series from the 90s. Really worth watching. Everything from the voices to the music to the animation style. Seek this out. It's worth checking out. That means you, Cade. And Jason. Anyway. Hey,
before we start talking about the episodes, Jason, can I ask you to do me a favor quick? Can you say the word no sage out loud quick?
No phage.
Okay, thank you.
Why?
I learned on Supergirl that to get annoying people out to like leave, they just have to say their name backwards.
I don't think we should end the podcast on that. I don't think we should even talk about any of the shows. That's so perfect. Oh man. It's sad that the funniest thing will be in the first 3 minutes. Oh, it's so awesome. Anyway, so let's get the ball rolling with this week's Supergirl. Come on, homegirl, he said with a smile. Get on to the recap of the episode, which was titled, and I'm going to choose to pronounce it however which way I feel like pronouncing it, Mr. and Mrs. Mixie Pitlick, whatever. There's a new complication in Kara Danvers' life, and it isn't not having a degree in journalism or why she was wearing glasses for years before she ever decided to be Supergirl. It's actually a mischievous trickster from the fifth dimension, Mr. Mixie Pitlick. Notice I didn't say imp, because unlike most other versions of this character that date back to the 1940s, this is a slightly more studly-looking version of the intergalactic leprechaun that used to plague Superman about every 90 days. So the main premise of the story is that Mixie has been watching Supergal from afar and is convinced that they are meant to be together, sort of like having Cupid himself having a crush on you. Of course, Mon-El isn't thrilled with this so-called competition, so Mixie keeps flicking him away so he can concentrate on wooing Kara. Eventually, we get to what for many years was the silliest bit of but still iconic way you get rid of this rogue Rumpelstiltskin, you get him to say his own name backwards. And Kara does divine a way that tricks the preening prankster into being popped back to his plane of existence. Yes, I did a lot of alliteration there. So, subplots in this episode. Well, Alex and Maggie having Valentine's Day issues, Wynn hooks up with a badass alien chick, and to be honest, I don't recall there being much else in this one. I know we had no guardian, so sad. So, hey, let's get to our discussion. Now, I think we simply have to start with Mixie over there. And I'm going to lean a little bit more on my DC Comics enthusiasts here to see how they took to this decidedly different take on the character. And, oh, by the way, before either of you say anything, and I really mean Jason here, the first one of you who rolls out one of those embarrassing, adamant comments like, "That's not my Mixie-pitlick," I'm going to give you a smack. So, with that said, Cade, what did you think of how they handled the Mixie one here?
I like the version they gave us. He framed within the show Supergirl we've given, this version works for their show. I'm far more fun of far more entertaining him and Mon-El squaring off for her affection than him, Jimmy Olsen and Mon-El, because no one cares there. Him playing the foil to Mon-El is far more entertaining. He was puckish, as Mixie-pitlick generally is. Mischievous in ways that he doesn't quite understand how bad they are, to do things like the Parasite incident where he was going to be a hero and save everybody. He has no comprehension how bad that could be, but he did it because that was what he wanted to do. He got Supergirl out. He was like, we can be heroes together. He did the things that Mixie-pitlick does, but in a way that would work towards Supergirl instead of Superman. If it had just been him versus Supergirl in the way he's always with Superman, it wouldn't have been the same. It would have been, well, they're just redoing it. So by adding in that element that he thinks that's his perfect woman, it did add something to the show more interesting for that character here. So all I can say is I enjoyed it. He was funny at times. The things he did, like the duel with the pistols with Mon-El, was very Mixie-pitlick, making people just disappear. It was all there for me. I had no problem with him whatsoever.
Oh, cool. Jason, you're our other super fan here.
I have to echo a lot of what he said. It was a really good take on the character. Very fun. My favorite part was the whole duel, which you know is rigged from the beginning. But,
that was excellent, actually. Were they? Yeah. Did Supergirl actually go off and like parody Hamilton for a moment there? Was that what was happening?
Sure, yes. Did. Yeah.
Specifically referenced Hamilton. Yeah,
talk about being current, right? Very nice, Supergirl. So, Vicky, I know you don't have the Mixie background that the three of us have, but I'm still curious to hear what you thought of this because, you know, it's something different for the show, certainly.
I got a real kick out of this episode. I just thought it was so much fun, kind of just to have him introduce this chaotic element into the show that is just slightly different from the kind of villain of the week or alien of the week that we usually get. It was just kind of a breath of fresh air and just right. Like enough of a change of pace to make it a lot of fun. Just kind of like a casting note, like the guy that they cast as Mixie, he was a genie on the Once Upon a Time.
No.
Spinoff. So I recognize him from that.
So he's typecast.
Exactly. Yeah. So like this magical creature, yeah. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Like I'm gonna join the chorus. I really like the duel scene there, and that was fun. But then how she just outsmarted him and drew him to the fortress in solitude and didn't give him a choice, what was really good.
Right. So Daniel, you can be the soul of contention here if you don't agree with everybody. So what was your take on Mixie?
I thought he was great. Pretty much like you had been able to. This guy is so much cooler than before.
Your audio is a little bit muffled there. If you want to give it another shot, there you go. I think you're gonna be good now.
He's just like a zillion times better than boring ass Mon-El.
Yes.
So I enjoyed it. Lots of energy. The actor was seemed to be having fun in the role. Wasn't, you know, blandsome. So I was totally into this guy. Yeah,
that was one of the great. I love the line "blandsome." It's all dark and blandsome, or something.
You know what? Actually, I think he has kind of more chemistry with her than kind of Manal or James.
No, yeah, definitely.
That's. I don't think you're wrong on that one. Unfortunately for the people behind the scenes, like, yeah, the one time you did some good casting, and now, yeah, there's more. They click better than these two do. Whatever. Yeah, I also agree with all four of you. Mixie can be a difficult character to pull off and not it just be like eye rolling. And I thought they found a good blend for this show where you were able to have the level of mischief, but find a way to work it into the show. Like what Cade was saying, this isn't him against Superman where he just wants to screw with him. He doesn't want to screw with her. Well, screw is in there somehow, but not with. But, I also feel the need to point out one little geeky reference with him here. The fact that early on in the episode, when he's mocking Mon-El, he actually refers to him as McGurk-El. Did you catch that?
No, I missed that.
Well, he does call, if you were to watch it again, and I don't think you're going to ever do that, he does call him McGurk-El, which that's kind of an awesome Mixie reference. I mean, if you watch like the Superman animated cartoon, for example, when he first appears, he keeps walking around Metropolis yelling, McGurk, McGurk, whatever, looking for some unknown person named McGurk, like, you know, with Gilbert Gottfried's voice or something. So it's kind of funny that they found a way to work that in. I also noticed, I think his shirt, when he first appears, is of a purple color, which also echoes one of the two colors he tends to wear. Thankfully, they didn't give him the orange and purple outfit with the bowler and everything, which would have just been ridiculous, I think. Now, the only problem right now is the stuff with Mixie was so compelling and fun to watch, it pretty much outweighs everything else in the episode, so I don't know how much more we want to talk about here, but I'm going to bring it up anyway in case, you know, y'all want to talk about it. So the subplots we had going on here, whether it be Kara and Mon-El, the Alex and, oh God, I don't even want to say it, the Alex and Maggie stuff, or maybe the Wynn and the, I don't know if we ever name her, but the, I just keep calling her the badass alien chick. I don't know if we get the game.
Lyra.
Lyra. Oh, okay. Interesting. I wonder if she's an actual character I'm not aware of. So Vicky, since you spoke up, excellent. You can go first on this. Any of those or anything else that you thought were worthy of mention here?
I'm gonna, like, with Kara and Mon-El, I'm just saying, I kind of like how she's standing up for herself, and she's, you know, taking a stand with him, because I think that shows some character development from season one, because back then she wouldn't have necessarily have been as assertive as she has been with him.
That's
so
true.
I do like that.
I think I hear Vicky's clock.
Yes.
The magic.
Vicky. It's that time.
And I mean, the Alex and Maggie stuff was fine. I mean, it's kind of stereotypical to have a plotline where one person doesn't like Valentine's Day, which, I mean, it's fine. But then you have to have the, oh, well, I'm going to bring them around to it. So, I mean, that was just kind of, I don't know, you can, whatever.
Did anyone else think that, hey, I feel like they aired this episode a week too late? Because it was clearly a Valentine's Day episode, and they aired it the week after Valentine's Day. So someone scheduled something off, I think.
Real timely.
It's right out there with the Legends episode, the Christmas episode.
the Christmas in February episode.
Yeah.
Anyone else want to weigh in on any of these things? Dan or Jason or anyone else? Or Mock?
Yeah,
Dan? Not really. I thought it was dumb.
I enjoyed Wynn's little storyline. I thought that was fine, and I liked the actress they paired him with, but the Maggie crap was just crappy, cliched garbage. It's terrible, terrible. I can't stand that character. With her lame, like, 30 years ago, I had a shitty Valentine's Day story. Oh.
Yeah.
The story, and you know what? The story was awful. It's like, really? That's it? I mean, shut up. Yeah, I'm kind of starting to. I applauded them having the relationship, but and getting into it on the show. But now I've kind of grown tired of how they're dealing with it, because these are women who are, I'm guessing at the very least, in their late 20s or heading into their 30s, whatever, and they're still acting too often like they're out of high school. It kind of goes to what Cade was saying in a previous podcast about the CW relationship phenomenon, where it becomes more often than not just annoying or grating and just wasting my time. And I think, I don't actually mind the Maggie character per se, but if this is her only function, then I'm not going to end up liking her character, because she's not really fulfilling anything on the show other than just being an annoying foil for Alex for a storyline I don't actually care about.
Yeah, because we actually, you know, when we first met her, she was like doing her job and stuff, and now that's kind of gone away and we never really see her doing any of that.
Right. Right. She's at the very least she's a cop. I don't know if she's on, I can't remember if she's on a special unit with them or not.
She's a detective.
She's a detective. Right. Do some detecting. You know, because it seems like all you're doing is hanging out and getting pizza and moping. You know, just, you know, get on with it.
Are we saying a CW show took a female character who we saw do things and then decided not to let her do things anymore? Is that what we're talking about? That's crazy, guys. Come on now. That doesn't happen.
There's gambling going on here. Deep cut movie reference for you people. I do agree with Dan about, however, I actually did enjoy the Wynn stuff with the alien. I got a big kick out of that. It didn't take up that much time. Wynn's a very likable character, and I do like the fact that they've definitely moved on from him mooning over Kara from last season, and the whole scene where he has her meet her at like a normal like human diner. Because otherwise, like, can they only hang out in the creature cantina? Can they go anywhere else with a face like that? But I enjoy that they did that. I agree. I actually like that a lot. I really like the Wynn character a lot. I always want them to use him as much as they can, and not just for the occasional funny line or something. I like when he really plays a part in the show, except when it's Guardian stuff. Then I hate it.
Yeah.
Okay. Am I wrong? Can we amazingly move right on to the scorecards now?
Yep, let's go.
Excellent. So, Vicky, what did you think of this week's Supergirl? Grade-wise.
I'm going to give it a 4.5.
Wow! Oh.
I told you, I really liked it.
You did? No, you did. You did. Excellent. Wow. Cade?
I'm going to give it a 4.
It's a bit more normal. That's fucking me. Whiskey. Jason?
I think you're both too damn high. 3.5.
There we go. Daniel?
I'm only gonna give it to 3. There was really nothing spectacular for the most part, so we'll just give it a 3. You know, I enjoyed Mr. Mixapidlick, but the fact that they had to bring him on there just as like a plot device to hook Kara up with shitty ass Mon-El, it's just kind of like it takes something away for me. So.
That might be the best observation about the episode I've heard so far. It's so damn true. It's true. Because I have to agree. I really like the Mixapidlick, but that when you get to the bottom of it, that's what it ends up being used for. I'm going to go a little bit higher. I'm going to give it a 3.5 because I enjoyed how they did that character and the storyline, and I thought the Wynn stuff was cute. Everything else I could do without, and I could care less about the Kara Mon-El stuff. I mean, I don't hate it, but I don't care. I don't mind the actor. I just wish they could do something more with him that was interesting, because right now he's just not very interesting to me. Okay, so now let's buckle up because we're heading to Earth 2 for The Flash.
I hate every ape I see, from chimpanzee to chimpanzee. No, you'll never make a monkey out of me. Oh my God, I was wrong. It was Earth all along. You finally made a monkey.
Yes, we finally made
Yes, you finally made a monkey out of me.
Now, we left off last week with Jessie Quick popping through the interdimensional breach to tell Team Flash that her dad had been kidnapped. But not by terrorists or your average supervillains, but while he was on a mission to Gorilla City, which means it had to be Gorilla Grodd. So, a quartet from Earth 1, Barry, of course, Cisco, since he's the breach opener, Caitlin due to her previous close relationship with the Big Monkey, and Julian, because he knows how to dress when going on a safari, I guess. However, it all turns out to be a trap. And using the Earth to Harry Wells as his literal mouthpiece, Grodd lets him know he wants the Flash to defeat the current leader of Gorilla City, Solivar, in the arena. Then, Grodd can ascend to the throne and prevent Solivar's original plans to one day invade Earth 1, i.e. Central City, because Grodd claims to still have a soft spot for his old hometown. Now, of course, no one questions why Solivar would be interested in invading that one specific city on another Earth. Wouldn't he start with conquering cities and countries on his own planet? Whatever. And why Central City? Why not New York? Why not Washington, D.C.? But anyway. Flash buys it and takes on Solivar in the arena. And after looking like the powers of a speedster just aren't enough against a big talking ape, which sort of made no sense to me, but whatevs, Flash does manage to triumph as well as show mercy by not killing the defeated Solivar. Of course, Grodd is Barry tranked once again, and then, oh boy, we find out it was Grodd's plan to invade Central City. Wow, all those smart people in those cells, and it took them all that time to figure that one out. Anyway, Barry fakes his own death thanks to some frosty fakery, and the team does escape from Gorilla City and back to Earth 1, where Harry Wells is reunited with his daughter once again. Speaking of his daughter, Jessie, there are some, let's call them time-filling scenes, of Jessie and Wally going back and forth about whether they should have a relationship, whether she should stay on Earth 1, and so on. It's even less interesting to recap than to have watched it, so the less I say about it, the better. And there's also a bit of business between Julian and Caitlin, which at least was far more brief and far less annoying, at least this week. So, let's move on to the discussion. And let's get into Grodd, our opinions of Grodd, and really just how they treated that character after the last few times we've seen him over the last couple seasons, and Gorilla City, let's go for it, because this is something we've been waiting for a while. And you'd think I'd go with, you know, the DC comic freaks like Jason or Cade to start with, but I'm going to do a curveball, and I'm going to go to Vicky first, because I'm kind of curious how she felt about the big gorilla and how that was handled.
I don't know. I think
I
don't know what I was quite what I was expecting, but I didn't enjoy this as much as the past Gorilla Grodd episodes that we've had. There was, I don't know, just something about it that didn't quite grab me. I mean, I don't know, maybe the, you know, the second half of the two-parter next week I'll find more interesting, but I don't know. It just seemed a little predictable to me.
But that's a fair comment. Jason?
I'm going to go the other way. I happen to love the Grodd parts of this episode. He really reminded me a lot of the comics, straight from the comics. I don't know if you'd agree with that or not. By the groan you just did, but at least in my opinion, it seemed like a plan ripped from the comics. Kind of goofy, it's kind of silly. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense if you put a lot of thought into it. Yeah. But you're just like, yeah, okay, we'll do it. And I don't know, for some stupid reason, I enjoyed the scene of Grodd dragging Barry from the cell because it reminded me of a comic cover.
Oh, absolutely. There's a lot of really nicely framed scenes here. Dan, what was your take on Grodd? I guess this is his third time appearing?
Yeah, third, yes. maybe fourth, I don't know. They kind of bounced him around a bit in season one, so I'm not sure. But anyway, I wasn't particularly impressed with how he was used. I found the whole thing to be pretty underwhelming. I mean, it was okay, but it just
didn't do a lot for me.
Interesting.
You have to look at this as like a setup for a two-part episode. This is the setup for it.
Well, if they didn't have the cliffhanger at a stupid fucking spot, then maybe I'd be excited about that. But they did at a stupid spot, so it's hard to be excited.
Right. So, Kate, instead of going first, I saved you for last on this one. So, not including me, I guess. So, how did you feel about it?
I enjoyed it, but there's some things here. I enjoyed Grodd because Grodd did what Grodd does so well. He manipulated these people far better than anyone has. They just took his word that these other gorillas were going... This is someone they've trapped and sent to another world. He was such a problem for them. But they're just going to take his word that this other gorilla is ready to storm on their world. It's like, Jesus, guys. You're so smart. Can you have brains for at least 5 seconds to maybe think you're being played here? Nope, just goes along with it. I think that's what makes it so interesting, is Grodd played them perfectly. But I almost feel he played them so perfectly, that's why they think they won, because he knew he wanted that all set up to do what he's about to do. Grodd lays plans down. He's not like, this is just for right now. This is a plan I'm working here. He's that much smarter than most people are. So I found it beautiful for Grodd. The rest of the team, they all look like dunces. Grodd looks amazing, which I think is the best part about this. That's what you want to see when Grodd's on there, is him just making them look so inept and stupid, falling for everything he does. And in that thing, I think it worked great.
For a CGI character, he provided a lot of presence to the screen.
Yeah. And I'm very excited for next week because of it.
Well, I'm probably going to fall more on the side of Kate and Jason on this one, which may or may not be predictable, whatever. Putting aside the fact that if you had told me, you know, whether it be 3 years ago or even, you know, three and a half months ago, like, we're going to get an episode in Gorilla City, I was just like, no, we're not. That's how. And I thought they found a way around the obvious massive budgetary concerns to pull it off, including coming up with a way of having, you know, Grodd speak through other people, i.e., Harry Wells, whatever. I thought that was really well done. I have to echo what Jason said, which is why I really like this, is this is the most Grodd-like Grodd I've seen on the show. This is the Grodd that I've known. And I know one shouldn't, you know, bring that into talking about the TV show, but screw it. I've known this character for like 30, 40 years. This is the closest I've gotten to him in a live-action series, and I was impressed with that. I did mock, as you heard in the recap, I did mock the imbecilic behavior of the characters, how they couldn't see the plan. It was pretty obvious. It was kind of a paint-by-numbers plan for Grodd here. It's one of those things, you put that aside because there's any number of dumb plans that happen on all these shows, I think. But I really enjoyed how the character was done. I would have liked a bit more with Solovar, especially since they went to the trouble of getting Keith David to do the voice. I really would have liked more with him. But again, it may come down to budget, I think. If this is a show that didn't have to worry about that, this could have been an amazing episode. But I was very pleased with it. I like this Grodd in this venue more than, oh, he's just a sad monkey who escaped, who, you know, says, you know, kill Flash or something like that. This is the telepathic super monkey I've been waiting for. And just based on the scenes and shots I see for next week, oh my gosh. I mean, I feel I'm going to be going over the moon about that one. I hope they don't disappoint me, but I really like what they did here.
Yeah, I have to say that his motivations have grown from the first season when he was, like you said, he was just sad and was looking for his Wells.
Yeah, his dad.
To now he's wanting to start conquering stuff. Hello. We're going to start taking some stuff over. And going through your budget thing, I was like, wow, they did a really good job with Gorilla City. They really put a lot of money into it. And then they got to the arena. I was like, oh, well, here, they cheaped out here.
Well, hey, you know what? If the CW had like $15-20 million to throw at the show, then they would do that. But
I absolutely agree. I absolutely agree with you. But it was just funny how my my perception of it went from like, wow, this is amazing, to like, oh, this is where they saved the money.
I didn't think the arena stuff was handled that badly, actually. Maybe if I watched it a second time, I would be more aware of that. I thought all things considered, I actually liked the way they handled that for this show. But I know what you're saying.
I thought the battle was kind of cool, but yeah, the green screen was so bad. And like, I was surprised it like wasn't like they should have just made a movie and like cast a white guy to play Grodd, because that's what they do in these fucking things. So,
wow, people are so cruel.
Wow.
Whatever. Anyway, let's move on to the next thing I think was super notable about this episode. Tom Cavanaugh. Now, we've been, for most of this season, let's face it, we've been kind of stuck with HR. And, you know, we can go back and forth of whether we think he's an insipid character or pointless or whatever, or why is he there. I think we've missed the earlier Cavanaugh characters. This episode was a showcase for Cavanaugh, because technically he ended up playing like three characters in this episode. So, even forget the Grodd stuff, we got such cool Cavanaugh stuff in this episode, it really thrilled me, quite frankly. So, Cade, what was your take on Mr. Cavanaugh?
He's a national treasure, as far as I'm concerned.
Wow.
I've always talked about how much I love Tom Cavanaugh on this show, and the fact we got Harry back from season two, which I really came to like, he's probably my favorite Cavanaugh character. And then we got the Grodd controlled one, and he did that so well. He played a character under mind control so well, because sometimes you see characters do it, and it's like, that's just terrible. His was delivery was good. The way he used his voice to give that I'm not really here tone, it was just fantastic. And I enjoyed his little reaction when Harry shows back up on Earth One and goes, oh, he's still here, referencing HR, which he clearly hates. I love that he doesn't like that character. It gives you a good insight to be like, oh, maybe we shouldn't like that character, because we know Harry, he's an asshole, but he's right probably about that guy. I'm hoping we get some more of him. He doesn't just, since we already have a two-parter, I hope we get more of him. I would like to see some interaction between the two of them, possibly. I think seeing how he plays all those two off of each other could be very entertaining for the show next week. And I hope he stays around for the rest of the season. That's what I really want, but it's not going to happen. But I can hope and pray.
Yeah, I'm really hoping, just based on this episode, that means we might get more of Harry from Earth 2, because I really miss that version. You know, we're never going to get season 1 version, but I would really like to see season 2 version. So I have to agree on that one. Anybody else? Dan?
Yeah, you guys covered it pretty good.
I have to say that the portrayal is so good that you have to sit there and wonder if it's actually the same guy playing it. Because it's almost like his facial features change, or they just look different when he's between the three people that he's playing.
I really enjoyed going right to what you just said, the fact that he kind of did a little something with his face when he was doing the Gorilla Grodd voice.
Exactly.
There was something almost simian about the way he was kind of using his cheek muscles and his jaw there. I'm very impressed. A lot of fun, but very impressed with him in this episode.
Yeah, this was the part of the episode that I really enjoyed.
So, is there anything else that we wanted to mention with this episode? I mean, you had the... Does anyone actually even want to bother talking about the Wally Jesse stuff? Or the Jillian...
It sucked.
Yeah,
it was filler.
That was...
I'm good skipping over everything else in this episode.
It felt to me like, hey, we've got an extra 10, 15 minutes in this episode. What are we going to do since we can't afford more gorilla stuff? Oh, let's do something... I mean, honestly... This was an instance where, hey, you know what, just pick up one of those, you know, lower tier villains and let them take him on while he's on Earth One. Whoever. Not the turtle, they've already used the turtle, but you know what I mean? But this back and forth, which actually made no sense. Their conversations, like, really? This is horrible. Why are you wasting my time with this?
It made me think of, like, how much interaction have they actually had to make me think that they're having these kind of deep discussions? Because I didn't see it.
That's actually a good point. You're right. It seems like this is all based on a, you know, first blush crush kind of a situation, but they haven't really done much else.
There were minor flirtations before she left, and then she comes back, and now they're like, I'm going to move here.
There was implied that they were talking between the world somehow. It's implied, but it's never, like, stated, and we don't know how long it was. But it seemed like that was implied, and then when he got his powers, he stopped talking to her in some way. Like, yeah. There was communication between them.
I have to say, much like the whole business with HR being able to transmit his stupid writing to his previous parallel Earth, I still haven't really gotten how the whole communication between the multiverse thing happens. I don't feel we've gotten that explanation. Not that I care that much, but it's like, wait, how are they doing that? I don't get it.
Yeah.
It's just dumb that this thing is just really freaking dumb. I mean, like, if they've been having conversations, like, at all, you'd think he would take, like, 1 second to say, hey, I've got powers now, too.
Yes.
No one have time for meaningful conversations anymore, but because I have powers now, just like you. Yeah, they would have fucking said something. It just made up tension that, like, it was inconsistent for, like, everything.
I totally agree on that, Kyle.
Considering that was one of his big things last year, was him not having powers when she got powers. You would have been like, you'd think he would be like, hey, guess what? It finally happened.
Yeah, I found that inexplicable. It's not like it happened yesterday. I mean, this has been going on for, what, weeks now?
And at times you couldn't tell if she was mad at him because he didn't talk to her or because he had powers. There were times where it's like, oh, he has powers too now? Oh, I'm not so special. It's like, I got that sense from him too. I'm like...
It was
going on with you people.
It made no sense. It was so stupid. Oh, in fact, even talking about it, I've actually lowered my grade just thinking about
it.
Yeah,
so did I.
Because
I did too.
Oh, man. God damn you people. All right. With that said, wow, I did not think we would be done with the show that quickly. This is amazing. Let's get to the scorecards here. I don't know what anyone's going to say about this one. Vicky, what was your final grade for The Flash?
3.5.
3.5? Vicky's like a 2 from us. Cade?
It's a 3.5.
All right. Jason?
4. It was a 4.5, but I talked myself down to 4. 4.5 to 4 just now.
I'm almost
so scared. What is your, can you pick a number please and stop saying both of them so much?
4.
4.
4.
4.
4.
Good.
4.
Okay.
4. I'm almost afraid to hear this one, Dan.
I'm going to give it a 3. It could have been higher, but I just can't get over the way that they laid out the cliffhanger instead of like having the episode end with like Barry and them realizing like the city is getting invaded like right now. They just, you know, had him and Iris hang out, and then this, like, you know, shit happened that they don't know about. It just, there's, like, no tension at all. And the fact that, like, I just hate that every time, like, something happens, it's, like, from their, like, future list Blackboard thing, there's just tons of hand-wringing, and it's just terrible. Oh, I remember, ooh, somebody, that's one word from this news thing, oh, I better look uncomfortable for the next 5 minutes. I'm over it. So, but you know, it wasn't a terrible episode, just didn't wow me. So 3.
Can I actually echo something Dan just said, because I wish I had mentioned this earlier. While I like the idea of the whole future checklist, just because it gave us an idea of what future episodes would be, as far as the whole, hey, if we change certain things, it'll change, like, why? Why would that mean anything? That doesn't even make sense. That's the stupidest plan. And they're like, oh wait, this is the show that's all about stupid plans. That's right. Nonsense. Might as well say, hey, I bet I don't hit myself in the future. I hit myself now. There, she's not going to die. It makes no sense. I should actually read what I originally wrote for my grade here, because it's kind of funny, because it makes no sense now. But I actually wrote, ooh, so close to a 5. But the pointless and forced drama of the Wally Jesse stuff has to account for some point. Yeah, I was going to give it a 4.5 too, but I'm knocking it to a 4. the Grodd stuff and the Kavanaugh stuff for me was still really strong. I do agree that I don't like quite how they buried the cliffhanger quite the way they did. The stuff leading up to it went on way too long. It was like, oh, look at all this nice stuff for like 10 minutes and then that. It should have been nice stuff for like 2 minutes and then that. So they really kind of did not pace things correctly in this episode. So I'll give it a 4. So let's move on to Legends of Tomorrow.
Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
We're knights of the round table. We dance where we're able. We do routines to call a scene to footwork impeccable. We dine well here in Camelot. We eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're knights of the round table. Our shows are formidable. The many times we give and rhyme to our quite unseen able. We're off the mad in Camelot. We sing from the diaphragm.
Now the Legends are racing against Rip Hunter and the Legion of Doom to obtain the remaining pieces of the reality-altering Spear of Destiny. And we start off with them being too late to protect the piece that Rip left in Detroit in the year 3000. But of far more interest is when we realize the person he left guarding that mystical segment was none other than Charles McNider, the Dr. Midnight we met as part of the Justice Society of America back in the 1940s. Oh, by the way, I'll be honest, it didn't click with me that it was Dr. Midnight until much later on in the episode when Amaya recognizes his bloody corpse, meaning that we've now killed off two members of the JSA in this series, Our Man and Dr. Midnight. Now, if only Rip Hunter could have sent Wild Dog and the Guardian to protect those spear chunks, but anyway. Now, the gang then has to reverse course all the way back to England in the 6th century, to the time of King Arthur. But there's one catch that truly bugs the heck out of your steel milk of magnesia guy over there. The story of King Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table, you know, Camelot, it's fiction, not fact. Despite how much it might mean to Mr. Would you just pick one childhood pop culture thing that left a major impact on you and stick with it already, Mr. Raymond, the palm to my face? So tired of that. Still, they bounce back to the times of yore, and when they meet with King Arthur, the latest in a long line of uninspired casting of now not only historical figures, but fictional ones as well, they meet Merlin, the wizard. But, it's not Malcolm Merlin, as some might have been expecting, like me. It's Stargirl? Okay, so soon we find out that Rip Hunter, before he lost his memory and obviously before he became Dark Rip, had scattered the JSA across time with pieces of the spear to hide and guard. Now, I was a little unclear when I heard him say three members, because I wasn't sure what the other one might be. Was he talking about Obsidian, who we already saw in the 1980s? Is it Commander Steel? I don't know. I got confused. Maybe it'll be cleared up in our ensuing discussion here. Anyway, Stargirl gets bamfed back to the 6th century, and somehow, and I gotta be honest, it's never clear exactly how or even why she does this, she ends up creating The Legend of King Arthur in Camelot. Not sure how that happens. Although I do wonder about the person who actually did create King Arthur, which happens about 600 years later, but maybe these stories were retold and became, you know, legend to him. I don't know.
Archimedes.
Shh. Anyway, speaking of... That's not who did it. Anyway, speaking of legends... Wow. They're there to get that spear piece that Stargirl isn't prepared to cough up. Meanwhile, Damien Dark and Rip Hunter also show up, take control of an entire army, and will be storming the castle if they're not given the spear piece by dawn. Now, what happens beyond that? Even though they are able to get the spear piece despite Stargirl's rather limp protests, they're stuck having to stick around due to Ray's once again misguided need to be the hero he imagined he should one day be, or some similar idiotic reasoning Ray always seems to come up with. Thankfully, Marty Stein still never learns from his mistakes, and a piece of tech that he borrowed from that year 3000 trip helps to save the day when combined with the staggering intensity of McRory's brain. By the end, the legends have not only the spear piece, but they've also captured Rip Hunter. Although, someone should have considered that Gideon and Rip might have a stronger bond than the current Wave Rider occupants. Oh, and apparently Sarah Lance-a-Lot... yet again has a knack for inspiring the sapphic side of any woman, regardless of time period. Okay. After all that, it's talking time. So let's first I'd like to look at Rip Hunter's, his original plan, because that was kind of, that for me, that was like one of the major revelations of this episode. You know, because, you know, look, we got the JSA again, and they're using Amaya the way decently for a change, and how bad is Stargirl? So, enough of my opinionating here. I want to hear what you guys have to say. So, Kay, why don't you start us off?
Okay, I'll say this. Well, I did find it interesting, Rip, using the JSA that way. Why would he pick them? Why would this group of people be the ones he goes, I'm going to pluck them out of time, I'm going to explain to them what's going on, and then drop them throughout history? That's the part, there's a disconnect there, and maybe we'll learn it, but it just seems so disconnected from what we've seen or anything at this point. It doesn't make sense to me at this point. It doesn't have to, but I still am like, that's just odd. It's just like you couldn't come up with anything else, so you just picked characters you already had. Oh, so you can use this other character you had no way of using at this point because you forgot how she works. So we immediately make a connection with Amaya by doing this. Oh, look, we found a way to use a character. That's almost how it felt watching the episode. It's like, This is how we can connect her and make her have something to do, because otherwise we have nothing for her, apparently. So just use the JSA again. We'll kill one of them off, and we'll make one of the other ones some weird crazy girl back in the 6th century bringing back legends to life at this point. It's like... we created these characters that people, I thought that was really cool, and then we made them dumb and stupid. We killed one, the other one you don't care about anymore. Is this the same show that we started the season with? What happened to this show?
Ooh, wow. It's negative Kate again today. Oh, boy.
Yeah. It's not as bad as it's been, but I just, while the show is still fun and there's moments I like, I'm still seeing some of the things that I didn't like of season one slipping in. Just senseless things at times.
Okay, I get what you're saying. All right, interesting.
Yeah, it's there's little bits of like senseless stuff, because before, like the early part of the season, there wasn't as much of that. It was like, okay, that makes sense. These characters interacting, I see where they're going. But slowly, we're just starting to see things. It's like they couldn't write themselves out the box, so they just drew a different box inside that box. And it's like, oh, we've made a new box. Don't worry about that other box we couldn't get out of. And the series is losing something because of that. It had such a great start. And getting the Legion of Doom together, and then we're really wasting them again at this point.
Wow, okay, interesting. Okay,
Kate, I'm going to put you down for a 5. Okay, Jason, what's your score?
Well, I have to say, I'm not going to be as negative as Cade, because I happen to think that this show is still some kind of goofy-ass fun as compared to last year. I don't like the fact that they're using the JSA as cannon fodder, because the JSA is near to my heart, and I'm sure Geoff Johns is not happy about how his sister's character is being written in this show, but Google that for all you people, you tens of people that listen and care. Google what Stargirl means to Geoff Johns, and you'll see. But later on, you know, the show, does it do dumb things? Yes. But it does some cool things, too, that we'll discuss later on. But, you know, I'm not going to be as negative as Cade.
Vix?
I liked that they gave Amaya a lot more to do this episode. Because, you know, that's something we've been kind of been waiting for. She contributed a lot to this episode. I was disappointed with Stargirl.
Yeah.
Because we finally get more than, what, like 5 seconds with her, and she's, like, I think, like Cade said, crazy and weird, and yeah. I don't know. But I thought Rip was pretty interesting this episode. I think he did the whole bad guy thing a little bit better than on the last episode. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting to get him, just him in Dark, no Merlin, no Reverse Flash and all of that.
Right.
So I liked those parts. So.
Okay. Dan, is there anything more you wanted to add in this that you haven't said already? I'm curious if you are you as negative as Kate about this, or somewhat slightly more.
Oh, no. I find some of the lamer parts of it are more like funny than anything. You know, like the continuing, like, you know, all these historical figures being played by like really really bland Canadians. It's pretty sweet. You know, but I thought, you know, lead singer of Nickelback, King Arthur, was okay. You know, and like the round table looked more like a baccarat table. It was just, you know, kind of, you know, cheesy. But also the coolest part of it was both this and Flash aired in the same night, and like they get attacked by knights in Camelot, like in basically like Gorilla City, like they shot from like the exact same spot. I'm like, oh, they're in Gorilla City being attacked by knights. Cool. Even though, you know, I've seen that in like 10 episodes of X-Files, so it's not like I haven't seen that like same forest in a zillion different shows.
Right.
It wasn't bad. I enjoyed it. Well, for the most part.
Yeah.
I'm kind of tired of Evil Rip, though. Like, I don't even remember why he's like a bad guy anymore. I don't know if it's been explained in any way that really like makes sense to me.
They screwed with his brain.
Evil Flash reprogrammed the little
Evil
Flash. What the... Reverse Flash reprogrammed the thing that had
Reverse Flash.
I'm done for the night. I just called him Flash.
You're out.
One more thing. Kind of just one thing that annoyed me was with Guinevere. Like, I don't know. Okay. I mean, like, it's fine to have awesome female characters, but I'm kind of over this. We have to rewrite every single female character, every historical female character, make her, you know, like a warrior and stuff. It's, I don't know, maybe it's from that Keira Knightley King Arthur movie that was horrible.
That was trash.
It was. Oh, it was. But I didn't see a need for it. It kind of annoyed me.
I agree with Vicky. I'm tired of seeing these strong female characters. They need to be historically accurate and weak. Yeah. Thank you for the excellent perspective, Vicky.
Bring back the waifs.
More Caitlins. I feel I might be on the opposite side from Kate on this one. As much as I think I sort of kind of hated the previous episode, and I thought this was kind of a reversal of fortune. There are some elements that are reminiscent of season one, because, you know, the whole trying to, you know, dealing with, you know, the wacky historical period stuff, which is actually the point of the show. But I really kind of enjoyed how they handled a lot of this. I actually like Dark Rip. I think he's more interesting than, you know, whiny, scoldy Rip. Is he as good a villain as, say, like the other members of the Legion of Doom? No, but he's a bit more watchable for me now than he was before. And I really liked how a lot of the characters were utilized here. Even when I think it's goofy or stupid, it's kind of like what Jason's saying. It's at least fun goofy or fun stupid, as opposed to, I want to throw something at the TV stupid or something. So I, you know, even with the once again horribly cast, you know, King Arthur or whatever, it's like I'm starting to try to accept that, because now it's just something I can make fun of. So it'll be shocking if they ever do cast someone well. But oh my god, they really ruined Stargirl. That was just a total waste. They couldn't do that decently. That was just horrible. Wow, I feel like the next topic I kind of had in line to talk about, we've sort of covered a little bit here. I mean, is there anything else we would even want to be bothered to say about King Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table? Or actually, you know, we can talk a little bit more about the whole Dark Hunter combo. That was one of the more fun things in the episode. But then again, Damian Dark is always kind of fun, so it's almost a cheat to even bother with it. And does anyone else have any opinions on Rey? Because I was just like... really? Again? That's kind of become a bit tiresome for me.
Yeah, I was just cringing. Just, ugh.
I mean, his dumb lightsaber.
I like that.
Ugh.
The lightsaber.
Goofy fun.
It didn't bother me. It was. It didn't bother me. It just bothered me that it feels like we've gone through this with him before. So it's one of those things like, hey, look, a character who never learns. And we just keep going through the same kind of thing. Like, either he's a cowboy or it's a Star Wars related thing, or now it's this. It's like, okay, Ray, we get it. You know, you have this yearning to be a hero from when you were a child, but you are one. Get over it already. And it's grating for me.
I think, honestly, if they're going to just keep repeating this, it would have been fine if he had died.
I agree.
Just going to keep him the same and keep repeating this same behavior.
Hey, if they can keep killing the Black Canary on Arrow, they can kill the Atom on this show. I'd be fine with it. You know, so. Yeah. What the hell? you people killed Dr. Midnight. Might as well kill Atom. Anyway.
I think I mentioned this before, but this could be something that they're building towards for him towards the end of the season, where he gets to be the hero. I mean, for real.
Oh, you mean like what they did with Captain Cold in the first season? All right.
Correct. Yeah.
Wow. Great. They're repeating something else. I like our show about time travel. You're trying not to repeat history, and that's what they do on the show. Anyway. Beyond that, so was there anything else that we really wanted to cover here? I mean, there was some, you know, like the Amaya-Sarah conflict or whatever, which I didn't know how I felt about it. Initially, I kind of thought it was kind of interesting, and then I thought it was kind of this silly full circle thing. I'm like, oh, now she does see that point of view. Who cares? Is there anything else that we care to talk about with this episode before we move on?
I want more Mick and Marty.
Yeah.
I do agree
they're
with
fun.
That.
They're fun together.
The interesting thing with the Mick and Marty combo, it's almost making me put aside the fact that they have the character Firestorm on the show, and he's so rarely Firestorm on this show.
When was the last time he was Firestorm?
I don't know.
When they were trying to get Rip back.
Which time?
The George Lucas.
Oh, George Lucas. You're right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So he is Firestorm for about like 12.8 seconds in that one or something. But I mean, I know it's a budget thing. I don't care. Come up with a way to do it, guys. Please, you know, show us less shots of the stupid Wave Rider flying around or something. I don't care.
Exactly.
I mean, yeah. Or at least, you know, make him transmute some shit. Come on. Anyway.
I know you mentioned it earlier, but really, they just put Rip on the ship and don't think that he can't control the ship?
I know!
Did he somehow lose? Did someone program, oh, Rip's bad, Gideon, don't listen to him? No, they just put him on the ship. It's this is his ship. His baby. These two have been together far longer than you can imagine, than they know. Of course he's just going to use the ship against you. You people are stupid.
I also, you have to love that. You know, you think at a certain point they'd learn, like, hey, have you ever noticed that every single person, that, you know, villain that you put in that little, you know, plexiglass cage gets out, you know, and runs amok? The only person you ever held in there for any time, I think maybe Einstein for a few minutes for some reason. I don't remember why. But, you know, either be Savage or this one. I'm sure there's been others. Like, no, it doesn't work, guys. It's lame. It's stupid. So all right. Wow, we are whipping through these. This is so awesome. let's get on to the scorecards here. So, Vicky, what grade will you give this week's Legends of Tomorrow?
I'll give it a 3.5.
All right. Okay, Mr. Negative.
I want you to know, a negative for me, this still gets a 3.5 because it's still better than most of the stuff from season. It's just not as good as it's been.
Okay.
That's all. All
right, that's fair. That's fair. Jason.
It gets a 4.
Dan?
I'm only going to give it a 3.5. I just can't get over the fact that, like, those mountains that they had near Camelot, like, aren't mountains that you're going to find in England at all. So. Sorry. Obviously Canada, guys.
You sound like me. I was having lunch or dinner with someone, a couple of people the other day, and we're all fans of the show This Is Us, which is an exquisitely written show, really good, whatever. But there was a scene on a subway train, and it's supposed to be taking place in New York, and I said, wait, so am I supposed to pretend that was a New York subway train? That didn't look anything like any New York subway train ever. And he's like, oh, you gotta let shit like that go. I was like, No, because in this day and age, you can recreate that. It doesn't take... It's not going to cost them millions of dollars to do that. So, anyway. Getting back to my grade here. Yeah, despite all the casting flaws and the weaker performances that don't hold my attention or the screen very well, what did I write here? Oh, I cannot tell a lie. It was a massive improvement over that George Washington debacle. So I'm going to go with Jason on this one. I'm going to give it a 4.
You and me are right on tonight.
We are simpatico, dude. All right. So let's move
better
on.
You to... than me.
Yeah, I know. Well, so let's move on to the last of our usual quartet here, and that show would be Arrow. Now, the latest episode was titled The Sin Eater, and apparently it's ladies' night on Arrow, with an episode co-written by two women and directed by a woman as well. So Vicky must have been so thrilled. And the villains of the week were three female criminals who have joined forces to basically wipe out every working extra in Vancouver. Oh, and they're also looking for some $100 million nest egg or depository, as they call it, even though no one else on the planet would ever call it that. Money that was left behind by the dead Tobias Church. Why no one else has taken this money? You got me on that one. But there's another woman who proves to be an even bigger issue for Oliver Queen this week. His reporter girlfriend who has figured out that he's the Green Arrow. Now, Ollie lamely denies this, but soon after Thea directs Felicity to hack Susan Williams' computer, and they see that she has hard evidence to prove that Ollie is in fact Green Arrow based on pictures taken in Russia. Again, if someone could just take a decent photo of him in Star City, they'd probably figure this out to begin with, and I'm not really sure why the police captain didn't recognize him since he was only a few feet away, but I digress. Lastly, the other major obstacle in this episode for Ollie, speaking of the police captain, is that the ACU has gotten a tip that Billy Malone actually died at the hands, or rather, the arrow points, of Green Arrow. So now the ACU is after Green Arrow as well. It is the ACU, right? Okay. The three villainesses are eventually beaten by Team Arrow, Quentin, and the ACU. Thea has Felicity frame the reporter to discredit her, not realizing that that would not only cost her the job, but ruined her reputation so that she would never get hired ever again. So now Thea and Ollie have got some issues to work out big time. Oh, and that leak about the Green Arrow being the actual murderer becomes a full-fledged scandal leaked to the press that threatens to take down the entire Queen administration, which largely seems to consist of about 3 or 4 people anyway. Finally, in some lighter subplots, Dinah gets sworn in as a cop and is poised to take the mantle of the latest Black Canary, and Curtis gets a Mr. Terrific outfit upgrade. You know, if they could just let him have the T-Sphere tech, he could actually be a real deal superhero here instead of being the proverbial punching and now kicking bag he continues to be. Oh, by the way, I know I left out the flashbacks. Ollie and Anatoly try not to get killed while running around the hospital. There's your flashback. So, enough of the recapping. Let's start talking, and I think I want to talk about the Ollie reporter Thea storyline, because in many ways I thought that was the most interesting thing going on in this episode. So I'm going to start off with Vicky on this one.
I was a little surprised that she kind of just came out and asked him like that. But, you know, true to form, he did answer truthfully, but then, you know, kind of blew it off. I don't agree with Thea with what she did. It was definitely crossing a line. I don't know what they should have done, but that was definitely taking it too far. But I think this thing with the reporter had to end sooner rather than later, because obviously it wasn't necessarily a good idea for them to necessarily be in a relationship, but I thought it was pretty interesting. And then obviously, you know, it raised trust issues with Thea and Oliver that are going to have to be worked out sometime down the line. So I thought it was good storyline.
Cool. Jason, because you sometimes skip our Arrow podcast recap.
Not this time. I actually thought it was a good storyline. Like, it was a good way to neutralize the reporter and cause problems with Ollie and Thea, as Vicky said. However, this is not exactly out of character for Thea to do.
Right.
I mean, it's not like she set a guy on fire like she's done before.
I forgot about that.
Yeah. Yeah, this time she just discredited a reporter and ruined her life. Yeah, thankfully, she's not burned.
Big whoop.
But
well, but she got burned, just not in
a different way. Oh, yeah, there we go. Good job.
She got burned. Be the Seth Meyers thing. You got burned.
That's why people come for the witty byplay.
Yeah. Wow, we've had like three moments of wit in this whole podcast. You, Dan, and Dan probably. That's pretty much. Sorry, Kate. I'm sure. And Vicky. Kate, so be witty now.
The interesting part about the storyline with the reporter is the fact she just openly asked him, which means what she was originally planning to do seems to have taken a turn when she found out she knows he's Arrow, but she wanted to get from him what would have happened if he had told her. I think if Thea and Felicity had told Oliver and let him handle this or find a better way to handle this than what they did, it might be more interesting to find out where that was going. The problem is they just made an enemy of her instead of someone who was doing a reporter story like a reporter should. She wasn't like she was trying to undermine him and be. She was doing what a reporter would do, looking into something.
Right. But
tell Oliver about it. This is a grown man. Let him make a decision about it. The problem is by doing this, who knows what she might do now? What was she going to do if Oliver just admitted it to her? How was she going to handle that? Would she have maybe taken all she knew and got rid of it anyway if he had gotten a chance to talk to her? We don't know.
I think she would have run with the story.
Here's the thing, though. If you do it that way, if, say, she confronts him, which we didn't really expect that to happen, if she confronts him with the question and he answers it another way, not the lame denial, but he actually admits it for whatever reason, which wasn't going to happen. The problem is that from that point on, other than maybe her own internal struggle, which since she's not a character that we focus on and this show doesn't have that kind of nuance, I don't think we would really pick up on that. You don't have any real conflict then. It just becomes,
that's true.
You know, I mean, other than like, will she or won't she say something? You know, was waiting for a shoe to drop or a bomb. I think by having Thea do what she did really works for the show and give, plus it finally gives Thea something to do, because Thea's been kind of like MIA for so much of the season, and I like that she did something which was kind of calculated and really forthright, and as Ollie even points out, reminded him of kind of stuff his mother would do, which is kind of true. It is very something. It is very something like that Moira would have done, I think. So she is her. She's not just her father's daughter. She's also her mother's daughter.
Yeah.
So that's why, considering Ollie has been kind of a moron from the beginning. I mean, hooking up with a reporter, it was stupid, you know, from day one, and you knew this was gonna turn out badly. So this was not a storyline I anticipated. So I like that they actually did something that I wasn't expecting, although I think some of us might assume or agree. I mean, I'm going to say this right now. I'm assuming at some point by the end of the season, he is going to eventually have to reveal his secret to everybody, because I believe that's what happened. That actually happens in the comics at a certain point as well. Is that?
It does. Yes.
So I feel that's what they're going to eventually do on the show, that everyone's going to know that he's Oliver Queen. And then since on all these shows, no one knows how to keep a secret identity anyway, you know, you might as well just get it out there.
I think.
Yep.
I was going to say. I'm sorry.
He was going to say he was sorry, and now Vicky can talk.
I think if he had been honest with her and been like, okay, yeah, I am the Green Arrow, she would have become a liability. Because then someone would have like gotten a hold of her and used her against him or something like that, and then she would have ended up dead probably.
Oliver loves to make liabilities and let everyone know. I mean,
yeah.
Then Prometheus would kill her.
Yeah.
Oh, Prometheus. Dan, what did you say? Say it again.
Is there any reason she couldn't just give the information to like some like other reporter, just leak it to like whoever now? I mean, she could just do that.
Of course she could. I'm assuming.
Or give it to Drago. Yeah.
That's what I think she did.
Give it to Drago.
Well, she couldn't give it to any credible news organization because since she's discredited, it would.
No, you don't have it's you anonymous. Don't have
to openly give it to her. You anonymously send it to a news organization. What are you talking about?
You send 6 photos to someone anonymously. There's your story. That's why I thought this is kind of. It didn't really make any sense because it could still blow them out of the water. But now the big scandal that happens at the end of the episode doesn't really matter, I guess. Or it's all going to come out.
Did you guys think that big scandal at the end of the episode was like before they show what it was? Did you think it was going to be like his identity being revealed?
I did.
No.
I did.
I did.
Yeah.
Because I
figured she would have just gone ballistic, just leaked it to someone to let it happen.
Yeah, I think it's what right. I thought it was going to be what we just said, because, and that would have been like so awesome. Like, you ruined her for nothing. you pushed her to do it. And then he'd really have a good reason to be mad at Thea. It's like, way to go, Thea. I'm going to tell everyone you're Speedy because I call you Speedy all the time anyway, and no one's picked up on that. Anyway. All right, so let's switch over to the villain storyline we had in this show. Specifically the 3 villains. And what the hell is going on with Prometheus at this point between his mom and this whole leaked scandal? Ooh, he's so evil. Dan, let's start with you for a change. what did you think about how they handled all that?
I thought it was interesting. I'm not really, I'm still not sure what they're going to do with Prometheus here. And I don't really know the 3 villains from the episode other than Lisa, whoever, bad cop. Was that I don't know. Was that
she's bad cop? No, that's
lady weird. Cop.
No. I like she's bad lady cop. BLC.
I don't think I saw. I don't know. I might have saw the red haired one at some point, but I haven't seen the other one, so I didn't really.
She was Cupid.
Yeah. Well, Scott had me skipping.
That might have been among the episodes I had Dan skip when it was the quick catch up kind of a thing.
So, she was on last year, wasn't she, for the Valentine's episode?
Yeah, she was
episode?
In the Valentine's split, episode. The other Suicide Squad one.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
She was.
She was in the one where Felicity and Ollie got fake married.
Well, clearly she didn't make much of an impression, which is really the point here.
Because she was, obsessed then with, Deadshot.
Oh, that's right.
That's right.
Stupid. Anyway, I mean, awesome. No, stupid. Cade?
This clearly was their B story for this week. Maybe C story. Villains I don't care about coming together to steal money that we haven't heard of till this point does nothing for me. We need something, we need villains, let's just get 3 villains we've had before. We'll make up money that church had hidden that we've never talked about before. It's like a lot of things coming together that we haven't seen put anywhere else, and it just, I don't care about it. I would find myself looking away, and then when I would notice that they were back in regular clothes, I'm like, okay, this is the story I do care about. Back to costumes, I don't care anymore, because it didn't do anything for me. And Prometheus is just a boring villain suddenly again. All that work they were starting to do, you take some time off and you come back and this is what he's doing. And his mother was just crazy. What was that about? Yeah. I didn't understand that.
Yeah.
That didn't make any sense. And so it just kind of, as far as villains go, this week was terrible for villains. There was nothing interesting about them.
Yeah, wow. And how come a church has been dead for 10 weeks and there's some gang members that know where his money is and they just leave it there instead of just taking it themselves?
It's the stupidest thing ever.
They all made a gentleman's bargain as thieves to not touch the money, apparently. It's like, because, no, somebody would have stolen that.
Because it's not like they're interested in money. It made no sense. I was like, I like the idea. I'll be positive to a certain extent. I mean, I like the idea of having these, the 3 women banding together, because I just like the idea, any of them separately are kind of a bore. Together, they're slightly less boring, but at least it's something different, and, but then when the whole plot was revealed, it's like, wait, what? Something you've never hinted at, and it makes no sense that no one else would have. It's not like they were following some weird arcane treasure map and found it. They just asked a few people. They killed a couple guys, and it's like, I'll take it. Like, why haven't any of you taken this? I don't understand. So that was dumb. Does anyone else want to weigh in about the villain stuff? Because I'm getting the vibe that we all had the kind of lame feeling with this one.
Other than the fact that the main story was so good that this can kind of be forgiven. Rutina Weasley was just awful. This lady cop. She's just a terrible actress. I think she's getting worse.
I hated her on True Blood as well. I'm not going to disagree with you. I couldn't stand when people would defend her on True Blood. It's like, oh, she's awful. She's annoying. She's horrible. I hear she's good in some movie. I don't care. I don't feel like seeing it. So as far as I'm concerned,
she ain't good here.
Yeah, she sucks.
No, yeah. She her acting ability is not super great. Just like her plan of getting money so she could take over like the criminal element of the city, that was also lame. Plus, in certain scenes, she looked like she had a beard, like in the dark. So I know what's up with that, but I wasn't feeling that at all.
Also, her reason to go back to crime, Quentin, basically, because he admitted like what he did because of his daughter, she's like, oh, I'm going to be a criminal again. It's like, what? What?
Yeah.
Your conviction is so weak, lady.
It set up a good scene with Quentin and Thea, but yeah, it was a really stupid like thing for her to. You know, her motivation, or fake motivation, whatever it ended up being.
It was like the worst, lamest explanation I had seen. It was like, oh, because I saw you were my bad, and I said I might as well be bad too. Shut up. I did like, and the fact is, I did like Quentin's moments with her, but only his side of it, because I just enjoy that actor now. But she was just the epitome of, you know. Lame lady cop, whatever.
It's one of those moments where the show has moments they want to get to, but they can't figure out an interesting way to get there, so they do really bad things to get to that point. Yeah. They're like, well, there we go. That's a good, interesting point. Why did I suffer through this garbage for you to give me that?
I can't disagree on that one either. So, It felt like other things were fairly minor or light this week, but I'll throw it out there in case anyone wants to mention anything like the stuff with Dinah or Curtis, whatever. Like, Vicky, is anything really caught your interest as far as anything else with this episode?
Just hopefully we're going to be getting more with Dinah. Now that she's actually like actual Black Canary, so I don't know. And I did just want to say, I mean, while the motivations were stupid, I did enjoy the three female villains teaming up. More so just China White and Carrie Kelly, but those were characters I kind of enjoy, so.
I tend to agree with you because I don't mind. I like the Cupid chick. I forget what her character's name is supposed to be. China White I always kind of forgot about. I know that she's just kind of like just ruthless. But we spent so much time with Lamey Cop that it just took away from it. I would have rather just been those two and not had her in it at all. But
I agree.
But then someone said, you know, we need to color this up a little bit. Yes, I said that. Yeah, I said it. I don't care. All right. I know we didn't really talk about the flashbacks, as I kind of joked in the recap, because there was nothing wrong with them. There was not that much to it, I thought. So I didn't know if you really want to bother saying, oh, look, they're trying to get away from some guys shooting at them in the hospital, and that's pretty much it. So
no,
it's always good.
Yeah, that was pretty much it. Yeah.
I like, it's always good to see Rush and Johnny Crowder, but, you know, nothing too crazy. Yeah.
No, they didn't laugh when I said that, son of bitches.
All right. It's late. Don't blame them.
There is a scene I want to talk about. Quentin and Dinah, when she's talking about, he asks her, so you're the new Black Canary. And she goes, I don't really know if I want that name because I don't want to try to be her. And he gives her a good speech. That's a very good moment with those two where he goes, I don't think she'd want you to be her. She'd want you to be better than her or try to be better than her, to be live up to the name, not try to replace the name. And that was a good moment because that's a thing. It's like, how is Quentin going to handle someone taking on that mantle, which is so tied to both his daughters, really? Would he just willingly give it? But he gives a good moment, and you get those characters interacting with each other, which was a very nice thing. Also, Curtis' new jacket is amazing, and I love it.
It was good. I was wondering if we would mention beyond like
that. When it showed up, and I went, there's white in the jacket. I was very happy.
Just to continue down that tech, just for another 30 seconds, just to be negative. I like the jacket. I don't even mind the face application he's using. But you know what's oddly bothering me? I know the actor and the character, whatever, he's got that big fro thing going on. But I hate the whole little weird slick back ponytail, whatever the hell you call that
thing. The cornrows.
It looks really weird to me. It doesn't. I don't like it. I don't know. I guess there's nothing they can do about that because they're not going to have him suddenly cut his hair. But I think it looks really lame.
But you know, plus doesn't it take forever to like braid your hair like that? So he just does it like in between battles.
And well, then, yeah.
You know, hey, you're forgetting that this is the show that had, you know, that Ollie found time to put on green eyeshadow before he went out to fight crime first season when he was running down the stairs. Like, wait, where did that come from? It's sparkly, you know. It's like a stripper, you know, doing the Blade Runner routine or something. I don't fucking know what's going on with that. All right, let's move on to the scorecards, I think. So, Vicky, what grade would you give this week's Arrow?
I'll give it a 4.
All right. Cade?
I'll give it a 4.
Jason?
I'm going to say 4.5. The Quentin game was strong this week. We're going to differ this time, aren't we?
Dan?
I'm also going to give it a 4. Even though some of the stuff was kind of lame, I thought everything came together nicely, and they did a pretty good job using their ensemble, plus some of the guest stars, like the police chief, Adrian, and whoever. So, 4. Not bad.
Well, I am... Wow, I think this might be the first time tonight. I'm going to buck the trend here. Apparently what I have written down here is that I'm going to give it a 3.5. I feel kind of bad about that now, but I'm still going to give it a 3.5.
You do you.
Ew. not while I'm on the podcast. Anyway. She's out of earshot. So. So, let us move on to what sometimes our favorite moment of the podcast, which would be...
The Speed Weed Hands-Off Moment of the Week!
So first up on our round table of bashing, let's start with Vicky.
Okay. Oh my gosh, this really annoyed me. How would Ray have been able to just move with not only his Adam suit on, but then the armor over it? Because armor is hard enough to move in as it is. And just with the Adam suit under the, I don't know, that's just impossible. I don't, that just irks me.
I thought he just had the chest plate on.
I don't care. I think it's... Vicky, that's great. I think you had a lame one or 2 weeks ago, but that one was, like, perfect. That's my favorite. Jason.
Okay, mine is Curtis should change his name from Mr. Terrific to Mr. Pathetic, because he got himself beat down by two women and kicked lamely. Lamely, he even got in a fetal position. It was terrible to look at.
They went Joe Pesci on his ass.
They did.
It was so bad. Oh, you guys are 2 for 2. I love that one. Okay.
Gorilla City. Can we pick an environment? Was it the Pacific Northwest, a jungle, or the desert? I could never tell where that was located. It was seemingly in 7 different continental regions all at the same time. Come on, guys.
It's Earth 2 for you, man.
Yeah, apparently. It's Earth 2. It's a wacky planet.
Gorilla City was built on, like, where 3 different environs came together at one time.
Oh, you guys are so fucking good tonight. Oh, man. Dan, we've got a lot to live up to now, and mine's going to suck. So what's yours?
Okay, well, I almost used, there was this really lame joke that Felicity made about, like, new Black Canary like wearing a mask instead of like, you know, the outfit, and it like didn't work at all. But I after watching Legends, I decided that there's the scene where Amaya like pulls the sword from the stone. They got some music playing there, and like I don't know what the hell it is, but it's just like indescribably like just doesn't fit the scene at all. It's not, I don't know what it is, but the music is just terrible. Just doesn't fit the scene at all.
It was like disco with a little bit of karaoke.
It was just weird. It was just fucking weird.
Interesting. I don't remember what the music was. It didn't really leave an impression. But now I still have it in my DVR, so I am going to go back and check that out because I'm curious now. Okay, I'll bring up the caboose here. Okay, this is going to be a weird one because it's been part of the show for so many years now. But sorry, I gotta say this. The line, "You have failed the city," has gone from catchphrase to joke to it's just embarrassing now. It's ridiculous. And now Green Arrow, he says it in instances that make no sense. He's telling these criminals they failed the city. Oh no, now they're gonna feel bad. What's the point of that? I'm so tired of it. Yo, Speedweed, give the guy a new line. Alright, I think that's all we have for this week. Wow, record time, so awesome. So if you enjoy this podcast, you know what? You'd probably enjoy our Facebook page as well. You can find us on Facebook as the Serious TV Drama Podcast. Type that in, like the page, and join the conversations. You can also find us on iTunes the very same way. We're the Serious TV Drama Podcast there as well. You can subscribe to the feed as well as rate and review us. Finally, you can also follow us on Twitter. The Twitter handle is at STVD Podcast. It's STVD as in Serious TV Drama Podcast. So you can follow our whatever meandering and ramblings that I might put out there from time to time. Not very often, but every once in a while. And I did say this earlier, but I'm going to say it on this podcast as well. I do greatly appreciate the folks, those who do listen to us and appreciate what we do, who tend to retweet our tweets or even repost our Facebook links from time to time. I really love that people do that in different groups, whatever, because anything we can do to expand our audience and to expose you people to other people and scare the hell out of them, I think that's a good thing for the podcast overall. So I want to thank everybody who does that. You guys got anything else to say? We're dealing with a surprising surplus of time for a change.
Yes.
I'm astonished.
This has been the 162nd episode.
you couldn't just say 162. No, at least you didn't screw up. That's right. Very nice. You're back on track.
Yes. You guys need to listen to the Legion podcast that these guys do. They do a good job.
Yeah, it's really
because they get it out. They get it out the same day.
And the fact that Dan and I actually were able to record in the morning, which I'm still kind of shocked we did that. But I know we did it once in the past. I think we might have done it like back in the Mad Men days or something. We had to like re-record something. We did it in the morning. That seems very familiar to me.
But, yes. Yeah. I know we make this look easy and all, but this is actually hard work.
It's parts of it are.
I'm trying to let you guys decide if I'm being sarcastic or not.
I don't know. It's that dad joke humor. I can never tell with you.
Yeah, it's not the hardest thing in the world to do. I mean, you know, I don't make it look as easy, like the production work as easy as like a Roz, for example. But I do what I can.
Oh, here we go. Oh man. Well, I believe we have a new way to end the podcast. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. Oh, I remember just in time. Vicky, being one of the people who does help to promote our podcast elsewhere, give us the website and the info there that you help out with.
Yeah, you can also find our podcast on popculthq.com.
It's a fine site with fine articles, especially that Tori Ann. She's a spitfire. She's a firecracker. She's like Vicki Vale and Lois Lane all wrapped up into one, and then you end up with Peggy Carter. I don't know how that happened. Anyway, so with that bizarre note that doesn't really mean much of anything, I'm going to start the good nights and see what you guys do after. So good night to you guys, and good night to everybody out there.
Good night.
Good night.
Mm-hmm.
Good night, Seattle. We love you.
Oh, baby, I hear the music call.
Overcast is coming.
Hey, if you guys actually do the Overcast, can I just volunteer to do the song at the end, and if I don't have to participate in the podcast?
Yeah, sure. You're in. Done.
And with that, once again, good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
The monarch of motion, the sultan of speed, the wizard of whizzle, yes indeed. Go from here to China in a no time flat. Beat the speed of light and you can't beat that. The
Flash, the Flash,
meet the mighty Flash.
The Flash, the Flash,
in a fight he'll smash and crash. Smash a whole gang of crooks or schnooks. Hey, he'll just clobber any kind of bad guy. Thief or robber, the world's fast. Yeah, man, the Flash,
the unbeatable Flash, the unbeatable Flash.
No one knows Barry Allen is his real name. Works with the police, justice is his aim. Wears a ring with the Flash's uniform in it. When danger threatens, he'll switch in a minute. The Flash,
the Flash, the Flash,
meet the mighty Flash.
The Flash, the Flash,
in a fight he'll smash, crash, smash a whole gang of crooks or schnooks. Hey, he'll just clobber any kind of hoodlum, thief or robber, the world's fastest human. Yeah, man, the Flash.